are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. Hello, I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we are against so much, what do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society might look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device you're listening on right now likely wasn't free, the radio waves to which you are listening are. However, WXRW costs money to operate. To that end, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase a hat or a mug or a t-shirt, and all of those proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or, if you particularly like any of the programming that you're listening to on WXRW, reach out and become an official underwriter. Every little bit helps. And now you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker of choice. Just tell your listening device at home to play WXRW River West Radio. We are on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Having real discussions about real topics with people you love and respect is really difficult, or it certainly can be. And it's made all the more difficult when you're both convinced you're right and the other person is wrong, or naive, or misinformed, or not really asking the right questions. It can get very emotional, and it can get very heated, and it can become an argument. And arguing with the people that you love and respect is never an easy thing. I recently had the beginning of a not so heated but still very passionate discussion with my mother, of all people. Now, I really like talking with my parents. I think given the resources that they had and the culture in which they were raised, they managed to raise three kids who were very good at critical thinking and skepticism and logical problem solving. And I don't just love them because they're my parents. I really like them as people. I think they've got really big hearts, and they're extremely generous with their time and their resources, and they're loving and kind, and they're really, really funny in a really kind of peculiarly dark way. And they're both super smart. And I respect them and I love them as friends just as much as I love them as family. So my ego isn't so big that I feel that I have all the answers. I've mentioned it before. One of the things I personally really like about anarchism as a system of organization is that it's not a limited or static ideology. And really, it's about as far from an ideology as you can really get, because it is a dynamic, fluid process that is ever changing as necessary, as the situation requires. And I also really like that the changes in a natural anarchist system aren't just stopgaps or patches, you know, to a system that's fundamentally flawed. Solutions are organically arrived at by the real needs of human beings. So, I don't have the answers. And I don't think any single person really does. I know what I would personally like for my life and the lives of my fellow human beings. And what I would like is really very simple. I don't want people to starve or to be thirsty or to be without safety and shelter or to waste their lives and their limitless potential in the pursuit of pointless drudgery. I want people to be healthy and happy and have complete self-determination and agency. That's what I want. And I'd like to think that is not too far a stretch, that a lot of people want those things. But you know, I don't really know. I can only speak for myself. You can only speak for yourself. I don't believe I have the right to dictate the terms by which anyone lives their life. Neoliberals, capitalists, socialists, fascists, industrialists, they all do. They believe there needs to be a ruling class that decides the terms everyone else gets to live by. They believe essentially that people don't deserve to wield their own power. They believe that we are all unruly beasts that need to be corralled and controlled, or we'll just tear each other apart. Do you believe that? I don't think it's true at all. I think the only reason we've come this far as a species is not because we've allowed ourselves to be controlled by a ruling class, but despite of it. I'm kind of getting away from my main thread for today's show. So back to my mom. During the discussion that I had with my mother, she raised a small list of questions that kind of literally everyone born and raised in a competitive neoliberal capitalism has ever asked any anarchist when the topic of anarchism comes up. And really that list is kind of, an abridged FAQ, or frequently asked questions, if you will. And they're not easy questions to answer. And to mind you, it's not that they're actually hard questions to find solutions to. It's more that they're hard questions to answer because the answers touch on some truths which are very difficult for people to accept. They are hurtful truths that can potentially be quite crushing. But until we step back and really look at the big picture and break our shared problems down into their fundamental truths, we will never, ever progress as a species. So today's episode is going to try and answer some of the frequently asked questions regarding anarchism. Okay, so it's typical for people born and raised in a neoliberal capitalism to dive right into very emotional topics. So that's where we're going to start today. Right? Question. What do you do with the murderers, thieves, and rapists? They're going to ask that usually very quickly. And that question kind of implies that we're taking care of the murderers, thieves, and rapists problem right now. And the hard truth is, we are absolutely not. Let's start with theft. Okay, so right off the bat, the grandest, largest, and most obscene theft of all time is completely legal in our society. The governments, corporations, and super wealthy have stolen the land on which you walk. You don't quote-unquote own it. They do. All of the natural resources that constitute our shared natural heritage are quote-unquote owned by the state, or the industrialists who sell the goods that they reap from that land. Banks and land monopolies back both political parties to maintain their ownership of land and natural resources. And here in Wisconsin, for example, those corporations barter very successfully with politicians to steal those resources away from you and me and everybody else. Big business robs every single one of us every day, and that is completely legal. The huge banks getting massive bailouts, that is theft from every single tax-paying citizen, and that's completely legal. Don't complain to me about theft when the law literally protects the grandest thieves of all time and history. Okay, what about murder? Well, that's totally legal too, so long as the state or corporations are the ones doing the murdering. We talk a lot about structural violence on this program because it is of primary concern. Structural violence. Let's look at all of our murderers, shall we? Heart disease, number one in the world. Cancer, number two, with lung cancer being chief among the cancers as the killer. Cancer number two in the whole world. Respiratory disease, number three, whole world. Accidents, number four. Stroke comes in at number five. Alzheimer's comes in at number six. Diabetes comes in at number seven. Pneumonia comes in as number eight. Kidney disease comes in at number nine. And suicide comes in at number 10. So in point of fact, murder is the lowest, least likely cause of death of all causes of death, according to the World Health Organization. You are more than 10 times as likely to kill yourself as you are to be killed by someone else. Who is murdering us? Massive corporations that pollute our air, water, and soil. And all of that is legal. Tobacco companies that sell literal poison, all legally. Automobile companies sell us dangerous vehicles, all quite legally. Food companies that saturate our diets with sugars and carbohydrates far above what the human body can and should tolerate, all legally. Our murderers are killing us by the hundreds of millions, and they are doing so under the protection of the law. Let's talk about rape. Rape culture permeates our capitalist society. Our bodies are commodified as items to be monetized. The bodies of women are especially coveted as items to be acquired and owned. Toxic masculinity born of a society hell-bent on ownership, competition, and macho posturing creates a sense of entitlement in boys and men. Entitlement to the bodies of women especially. That is our current culture and social climate creating that toxic masculinity and rape culture. And what are we doing to solve that problem? Well, the police crime database lists over 13,000 reported cases of police rapists from 2005 to 2012. 13,000 rapes by police officers, the people meant to be protecting us from rapists. And those are the cases that were actually reported. The Bureau of Justice Statistics reports that only 36% of rapes, 34% of attempted rapes, and 26% of sexual assaults are ever reported. And how likely do you think a rape survivor is to report a rape committed by a police officer? I don't have hard evidence to back this opinion up, but in a world where only 36% of rapes are actually reported to police, I somehow think rapes by police are even less likely to be reported to police. And if you think that higher rates of imprisonment and incarceration will stop rape, well, I hope you can see just how misguided that thought is. Because if there is ever an institution that perpetuates rape culture, it is the prison industrial complex. So, to answer that question, what would an anarchist society do about theft, murder, and rape? Well, a community without a state or large corporations to steal all of the land and natural resources might actually be able to organize the sharing of our land much more equitably. Murder is already the least likely thing to kill you. And in a community where you are no longer forced to compete with your neighbors for the barest essentials of life, I'm willing to wager that murder rates would drop, along with rates of violence in general. Also, in a world where everyone is guaranteed the essentials of life, healthy food, shelter, education, medicine, without exception or qualification, most petty crime as we recognize it today just cannot exist. And don't you think the potential for murderous conflict diminishes in a community that doesn't poison, overwork, stress, and undernourish all of its members? I personally do. Okay, so diehard cynics will certainly argue that there are some people, you know, psychopaths and sociopaths and pedophiles who are just so inherently genetically bad that they cannot be socialized, that we can never be safe in a society with those people in it without protection. Well, if you listen to our episode on power, you know that most psychopaths in our current society are actually living quite happily in positions of power. Most of our current psychopaths are the CEOs, the police, and correctional officers and politicians who hold sway over the lives of billions of people. The first step to solving any major problem like rape and murder is prevention. The way we raise our children right now is to train them to survive in the violent, competitive society in which we live. We discipline and beat and punish and manipulate our children endlessly to toughen them up or to shut them up or to get them to follow orders, etc., etc. In essence, a lot of our children are being traumatized in their upbringing to get them ready for this society that we have created and perpetuate. So it bears mentioning that a 2010 study by the U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health, found that there is a gene responsible for most pseudosexual violence. And the study also found, quite interestingly, that that gene will not express itself in an individual without a traumatic stress trigger. So to break it down, there are people walking around with you today who are potential pedophiles, rapists, and serial killers, and they will never harm a single person because the gene that makes them that way will not get expressed by a traumatic event. However, you put them in a society that perpetuates rape culture, competition, structural and sexual violence, like the society we live in today, and they are much, much more likely to have that psychosexual gene towards violence triggered. But you put that same pedophile rapist in a society where they have their basic needs met, they don't need to fight to survive, and nobody holds power over them, and nobody can tell them what to do. And I personally feel that they are much less likely to face a situation in which their gene for sexual violence will be triggered. Okay, so even with all of that in mind, I concede that even in a society devoid of competition for food, hierarchical power structures, and structural violence, some people will still be pedophiles and psychopaths. Well, in our current society, we rely on the state to deal with them. We rely on police and the criminal justice system to capture, try, and convict them. And then we put them into a place that is designed to make them even worse than they were before. We willingly give the state a monopoly on violence, just so we don't have to be responsible for dealing with dangerous people ourselves. Well, if you remember our episode on power, again, you recall that a world of real freedom is a world of responsibility. When you give up responsibility, you give up freedom. So, what would an anarchist community do with a pedophile who rapes a child? Nobody likes to think about that because we like giving up responsibility to the police caste. But we would need to take responsibility. Okay, how do we do that? Well, first, we could try transformative justice, counseling, and therapy, which I think is a great idea. Transformative justice has been found to be very effective in cases of abuse. All right, but just what if this person is just 100% bad? They're just a vicious, remorseless monster who refuses to cooperate in a civilized society. In a situation where all else has failed, you have a moral obligation to remove that person's ability to harm another person. How you achieve that is up to you and the community that you live in. You can ostracize them. Condemnation by your community can be a very effective tool towards healthy adjustment of, you know, dangerous individuals. You can exile them, kick them out of the community that they harmed, and if they try to return, stop them from doing so. Unequivocally, most anarchists believe that prison of any sort is patently immoral, and more importantly, it's just structurally ineffective. Prisons and cages in general only make people worse than when they went in them, never better. But in the case of like a human demon who's totally without any sociability, drastic means may be necessary. And that's really it. The cases of people like that, of true just demons, will be so small in a truly free society as to be nearly zero, but it will happen. And we will need to take responsibility to deal with it. To have freedom, you must take responsibility. Now, I want to be clear, and I've said this before, but it bears repeating. Anarchists do not generally believe that people are inherently good by nature. And obviously, good and bad are, you know, far too unique to your individual culture to even be real things that we can talk about. Anarchists recognize that all people, regardless of the culture in which they were raised, by dint of being human, are sociable. Even if you're a psychopath with murderous tendencies, it is in your personal best interest to play nice in a stateless, non-hierarchical society because your personal happiness and safety relies directly on the health and well-being of everyone else around you in your community. Unlike today in our I got mine, you know, dog eat dog competitive capitalism, you can only be as free and healthy as your neighbor is in an anarchism. You cannot divest your safety from the safety of literally everyone else. They are interconnected and interdependent. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to The Anti here on WXRW 104.1 River West Radio. I'm your host, NTSC, and today we're talking about kind of some frequently asked questions that any anarchist is going to deal with when talking with someone raised in this neoliberal capitalist society who's kind of, you know, subscribed, you know, wholeheartedly to the tenets of this society. We've just talked about thievery, murder, and rape. So another question frequently asked of any anarchist is, what do you do with the simpletons, the dummies, the stupids, the lazy people? Do they still get to live for free? And how do they earn the right to exist? And the person asking you that might not phrase it in exactly that way, but that's what they're really asking. And they may have anecdotal evidence along the lines of, well, you know, such and such at work. Well, he's kind of an idiot. You honestly want him to have control over his own life? He loves his work. It gives him purpose. Without his job as a paper stapler, he'd have nothing to do. You know, he'd just sit at home, crapping his pants and drooling into a bucket. He's a useless piece of trash who will only get in everyone's way. Surely we need to create a state and hierarchy along with a capitalist mode of production so we can contrive thousands of pointless jobs so he can maybe qualify for one of them so he can waste his whole life making minimum wage until he dies of heart disease or just does us all the favor of killing himself, right? So are you maybe seeing what my answer to this question is going to be? Yeah. Not all of us are going to be scientists designing new, better cultivation methods to feed millions of people or water filtration systems to try and remove all the trillions of tons of microplastics and petrochemicals from our drinking water or engineers trying to recycle the trillions of tires and bottles and straws and cigarette filters that litter and pollute every ocean, river, and stream or doctors trying to cure cancer, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But my question to you is, what do you do that actually can serve society? In a stateless, moneyless, propertyless community, your job as a clerk or a sales rep or a manager or an advisor or a server or a QA technician or just about 90% of all the jobs that exist right now will not exist. We will be free to cooperate and figure out ways to actually make all the things that do need to get done easier. Instead of fighting automation just for the sake of people, of keeping people working. And those dullards who have no useful skills? Well, the percentages show that you're one of them, and I am too. Most of us couldn't actually raise enough food to feed ourselves for a whole year, let alone a community of people. Our current society has taken away our ability to actually take care of ourselves and has shifted the burden of responsibility onto the shoulders of people we will never meet. We have put our lives in their hands completely. Farmers and laborers you will never know or see. So this comes directly to us from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. In 1870, 50% of the U.S. population was employed in agriculture. As of 2008, 10 years ago, less than 2% of the population is directly employed in agriculture. So in less than 150 years, we went from half of every American working on a farm to less than 2%. Where could further automation take us? What yields could we achieve with better practices, healthier soil, a better environment free from pollutants and poisons, improved natural fertilizers? We are already using less and less land to feed more and more people. What could we accomplish if we do away with the useless infrastructure like massive highways, only necessary to transport pointless trillions of tons of plastic and wasteful commodities that serve no real purpose? What could we do with the land being taken up by offices? According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, commercial enterprise covers more than 87 billion square feet of land. And that does not include manufacturing or industrial businesses. That means commercial offices and stores are taking up 3,120 square miles of land in America. And according to the Federal Highway Administration, there are 4.12 million miles of road in the United States. So, what are we idiots going to do in a classless, stateless, moneyless society where we are actually free to do what we want? We will do whatever the hell we want. What will we need to do? Well, we'll need to work together, as we always have, to solve our problems. And there is no real problem that faces you that does not face me. Nor is there any real problem that faces me that does not face you. It is a lie and a falsehood perpetuated by our current society that we are separate entities. We breathe the same air. We drink the same water. We walk the same earth. There are lots of things that actually need to get done, and those things are all moving rapidly towards automation. And the good news is we don't all need to know how to grow millions of tons of food to feed the world. We need to know how to help each other feed our immediate community. We can very happily achieve amazing things on a small scale, and those small scales can be scaled up to achieve even greater things. So would you rather sit in an office working on spreadsheets accounting for the profits or expenditures of the company for which you work while earning as little as that company can afford to pay you? Or would you rather work at something that is actually meaningful and essential to your whole community? Would you rather be on your feet all day or night serving patrons or clients or trying to foist some product on a customer? Or would you rather cooperate with people in your community to work towards a real, provable improvement for everyone? And while we're talking about work and jobs, and since our theoretical neoliberal capitalist is asking what we would do with all of our idiots who just aren't smart enough to do even the simplest thing, here's my answer. People like to have a purpose. People are stressed and depressed, and studies by Oxford University have shown that today, currently 53% of our human labor jobs are literally, in every sense of the word, pointless. More than half of the things we have contrived serve no purpose at all but to keep people laboring. So instead of creating pointless jobs for people to work, let's incentivize people to do what they love. Let's free ourselves to actually live our lives and give ourselves the freedom to do so. So that only answers kind of two of the frequently asked questions. We'll have to do more later. We're running out of time. Thank you so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been your host, NTSC, and I'll be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found on riverwestradio.com.